right to it, and lots to learn in this hour and be updated on with Dr. Henry Nyman. U.S. Scored its biggest single-day record today of deaths. The total now, 28,300 Americans dead. The single-day record of, what was it, 2,228 in one day. So no seasonal slackening yet. We're watching it very closely. Lots of news up there for you to look at and consider. Use to make up your own mind. Henry, welcome back. How are you?
Well, it's good to be back, and it's been pretty busy again. Actually, the number of deaths were 4,000 higher than you said. And
really?
That was because of New York. And the reason New York went up by 4,000 or 3,700 over and above what they normally do is because they decided that all of these deaths that were listed as COVID on their death certificates, but were only listed as probable because they hadn't been tested. Mm-hmm. They decided that, well, they really were dead, and there was enough evidence that it was due to COVID that it was on their death certificates. So maybe that really was a COVID case, and it was a little more than probable. So they put that into their death category
that's interesting.
Tacked on this, almost 4,000 cases.
Yeah, this is a two-hour-old story. Wow, way off.
Right. So it's not... It's not 4,000 today. This goes back about a month or so, but there have been 4,000 that have died in the last month with COVID on the death certificates. And it's still an undercount because there are going to be a lot of these cases that have it on their death certificates actually either were in the hospital, but they never got a chance to test them, or they were in extended care facilities where, you know, they basically had an outbreak there. These residents died with the same symptoms, but they didn't get a chance to test them either. And, you know, it was somewhat like, you know, 17 years ago when they had SARS deaths in Taiwan, and they, you know, basically wanted to keep their numbers down, and there were a lot of healthcare workers that were getting infected, and so they decided that to limit the spread, they would cremate their bodies, and since it was dangerous to do anything, you know, above and beyond, they just didn't test them, and they called them SARS-like, and they put them in a different category. You know, they weren't SARS confirmed because they weren't tested. They were just SARS like. Mm-hmm. So they would have two different columns on their website, and a lot of the media reports would just quote the SARS side and ignore the SARS like. And I think they ended up with more SARS like than SARS. So they more than cut their death toll in half by just, you know, not testing them.
Funny how that works.
In any event, yeah. So the numbers, you know, higher for New York now, and that actually puts the deaths to just under 30,000 now for the U.S. And you know, that's you can kind of think of that number relative to some of the media reports that are still in, you know, a state of denial. And they're trying to say, oh, these projections were way too high, and it's going to be way less, and they cut it down to 60,000. And, you know, that's probably an overestimate. And the guys making those statements just aren't paying attention because there's already 30,000 dead. They're not coming back. And that means they're only 30,000 away from the estimate. And just as you mentioned, there's 2,000 dying every day. So if they just maintain that rate, there'll be a 60,000 dead in 2 weeks.
2 weeks. They understand right. that, ladies and right. gentlemen. This is how fast this rolls up. So, yeah, right. here's the rest of that story.
And that's not exponential growth.
No.
That's maintaining the current rate. So yep. if they maintain the current rate for two more weeks, the 30,000 dead in the U.S. will be 60,000.
They've flattened the curve, Henry. It's going to stay right. stable.
right, at 2,000 dead a day, right.
That's right.
And so, you know, it doesn't take long to go from 30 to 60 if you're doing 2,000, if you're adding 2,000 each day. And they're actually going up. And to hit that 2,000 a day is not hard to even figure out how they got there. You can just look at today's numbers. And, I mean, between New York and New Jersey, that takes care of 1,000. New York is around 700.
Right there.
I mean, today New Jersey was 362. So you add New York and New Jersey, and you're over 1,000. And to get another 1,000 is not difficult. Massachusetts today had 113 deaths. Michigan had 166, so those two states give you 300. You only got 700 to go. And Louisiana did 130 today. California did 51. Pennsylvania did 60. Illinois did 74. Florida did 72. Connecticut did 69. Georgia did 44. So, you know, doing 2,000 deaths per day is par for the course. It's not an unusual day. It's just what happens each day, and those numbers keep going up. I mean, for these lower ones, for New York and New Jersey, they've been pretty steady. But Michigan, 166, I believe that's the most they've ever done in one day. Massachusetts is now doing over 100 each day. Louisiana's in the same ballpark. And so all it takes is two more weeks. Most of the projections have it, you know, at this high level for more than 2 weeks. They talk about, you know, the deaths are a trailing indicator, and, you know, they're going to kind of plateau, flattening out, and then they'll start going down, but they're, you know, may not start going down till May, which is 2 weeks away. So by the May 1st, when, you know, Trump wants to start, you know, easing up, or even earlier, based on his press conference today, that by then they may very well be at 60,000 dead and counting, because it's
I don't know how that figure can't be reached, obviously.
Right. Right. It's hard to believe that it can't be reached in April. and when those projections were done, I mean, the projections, I'm not going to defend the projections as being that accurate, because they got to make a bunch of assumptions. They got to make assumptions that how long, you know, how quickly, how steep the curve is, how long it takes to double, and then for how long that doubling is going to continue. And then there's a bunch of things go into that. It's especially hard because, you know, the testing is all over the place. You know, some places weren't testing because they didn't have kits. Uh-huh. Others had samples collected, but they were just backlogged. And so when they see the numbers, it's difficult to know, well, are those numbers going up because they have that many new cases, or the numbers going up because they have that many tests that are done, because they've started to go through the backlog
right.
of cases they've already identified.
Oh, they got a big backlog. And, yeah.
Right. And so those numbers are, you know, ballpark numbers. And they depend
by the way,
upon
there's
a lot of variables.
Yeah, there's an interesting story that fits right into this, and it looks to me like it's the Trump campaign at work. But Surgeon General Adams today announced that the Bill Gates CDC WHO predictive contagion model has been dumped.
He didn't say those words. I mean, that's how they characterize the model. And the models are done by multiple institutions.
That's right. That's just showbiz.
Gets you to click on the link and says, "Oh, what's that model?"
And
the mind of the writer. That's where
he
that
did
writer,
say.
That's where that model exists.
The Surgeon General did say,
right.
That's right, we're going to use real numbers. And people immediately leaped on that and said, they've been notoriously, intentionally using fake numbers this whole time.
Yeah.
No, they're going to use real numbers, but whose numbers are they? They're the Trump administration numbers, ultimately. That's what we're going to be seeing.
No, it's not even going to be that. They're going to take real numbers as the numbers reported by the state agency. So they're not going to do a...
With or without testing, though. That's the question.
You're right. But even with limited testing, and the testing's, like I said, all over the place, they still are going to have high numbers. And the numbers are getting higher. And one of the reasons, I saw that article. That article is, pure fiction. I mean, they're talking about, there's differences in other countries and, the numbers in the U.S. might not match what's going on in Europe. The numbers are being driven by the strain of the virus. And the strain of the virus that is driving the numbers in Europe and driving the numbers in the United States and going to be driving the numbers in South America and Africa and Australia are all due to this one strain that was identified in northern Italy. And that one strain is taking over the world. And so the numbers that they got out of Asia back, 2 or 3 months ago are just obsolete. Those don't have anything to do with anything anymore. Because if you look at the top countries in the world, Asia's not in the ballpark. I mean, United States is in a class by themselves, okay? So U.S. is way ahead of everybody. But after the U.S. comes Spain, then Italy, then France, then Germany, then the U.K. These are all European countries. And these European countries were heavily impacted by the strain. It was in northern Italy. Northern Italy ended up seeding Europe. And now Europe has got these high fatality rates. I mean, they're not even really case fatality rates because, a lot of people are on ventilators and haven't died yet. But if they, even if they assume that they're all going to live, they're still in double digits.
Yeah,
Spain's got 10.5. Italy's got 12. It's got 12.97. So they're at 13. France is at 11. UK is at 13. Belgium's at 13. Netherlands at 11. That's people that are already dead. Divided by people that are dead, people that have been discharged, and people that are on ventilators, of which 70-80% are going to die. So they're well into the mid-teens. They're in the neighborhood of 15% case fatality rate. Okay.
Yep. It's right there.
And those numbers are significantly higher than the numbers were in Asia. And that's because the virus initially had not fully adapted to humans, and the viral loads weren't going to be as high. And so they were going to have cases, and they were going to have deaths, and they were going to be alarming. But they're not as high as they are in Europe, and they're not as high as they are in the United States. And so the argument that, oh, they're not looking at the right countries, the U.S. is number one in the world. I don't know what rock these guys are living under. It's like they have no idea what real data is. They have this parallel universe where they make up their own story and data. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they come up with these numbers. Oh, I don't think we can get to 60,000. You know, they lowered it to 60,000. And, you know, that's an overestimate. They aren't going to get to that level.
How can an allegedly intelligent adult say that? It's so stupid. It's stupid.
Because
it's
they even... don't look at anything that's real. No. All they look at is interpretations and conspiracies. That the numbers aren't real, although it's kind of backwards. I mean, most countries lower the numbers. I mean, they lower the numbers by not testing, just like with New York's numbers. I mean, they had people who had COVID on their death certificates as the cause of death. And they didn't count them. Well, they did. They had them in a separate category. They counted them as probable cases. And probable cases were not in their reported confirmed cases. The confirmed cases had to be tested. And they have all of these long-term care facilities where it's like, as you said, the virus will just run through those facilities, and there'll just be one case after the other, most of whom will die. And especially now with this Italian strain, you know, in some cases, probably all of them will die.
Yeah.
And so they have these large numbers of cases, and they get to a level where they're not testing them anymore. They're basically saying, well, we're going to test 10. You got 10 that are positive. You got 20 or 30 more with the same symptoms.
That's what the CDC decided last week.
Or they get those symptoms a week or two later.
Yeah.
And they still don't have enough test kits. And they're just saying, well, we're going to, I mean, they had one long-term care facility outside of Pittsburgh in Beaver County. And they tested, I don't know how many, maybe a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
And they came to the conclusion that all of the staff and all of the residents are infected. And
wow.
How many staff and residents are in the facility? 700.
I was going to guess a couple hundred. Oh, that's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. And how many deaths do they have listed for the entire Beaver County? 13.
Oh, my.
So you can do the math. Yeah. They got 13 official deaths, and they got 700 that they've said are infected with this virus. And I don't know how many have died so far, but I know it's more than 13. And it's been sitting at 13 since last week as far as the deaths in that entire county, and this one facility is in that county. And they just did another one in eastern Pennsylvania, in Montgomery County, which is a suburb of Philly. And they listed, I think, 73 long-term care facilities with at least one positive. I mean, this isn't 73 people. This is 73 facilities.
Got it.
In one county. And they've got...
There's 73 facilities in one county. That's remarkable. I would never have guessed that. Yeah.
Montgomery County. Yeah. So, there are a lot in the Northeast, in where the virus is at very high levels, like New York, New Jersey, and eastern Pennsylvania. And they all have the same virus. I mean, the sequences are coming out, you know, 100, 200 sequences per day are coming out now. Everybody's kind of getting into the, I mean, New York, okay? How many sequences do you think the state of New York, Wadsworth, had published prior to today?
I couldn't guess.
Ballpark.
15,000.
Zero. So they have published sequences. Zero. Big goose egg. The sequences came from NYU or Mount Sinai. That's who did the sequencing. Wadsworth, the state lab, had lots of samples. I mean, how many people? So they released, I don't know, I think 25 today. And of the 25 they released, 25 were the Italian strain. So,
well, you've sent for 2 days a lot of information about what strain is hitting which area, and it's all Italian. And you're right, it's taking over the world. It's brooming all the other strains away.
It's in Alaska. It's in Washington. I mean, I didn't send to all of them because some are changing over, so they're tricky. So I mean, Washington State's a good example. Washington State used to be this ORF 8 version that I told
you about. It was. I remember.
And it was almost 100% ORF 8 in Seattle. And then about 2 or 3 weeks ago, you started to see the Italian strain showing up. And then the most recent ones have it at about 60-70% of the cases are the Italian strain now in Washington State. And then next door in Idaho, it's 100% Italian. So all of the sequences out of Idaho so far have been the Italian strain.
That's a tough strain.
It's even up in Alaska. They got six sequences out of Alaska. Four of them are the Italian strain. So this strain is all over the place. It's most common on the East Coast. So New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, New Hampshire, Eastern Pennsylvania. Delaware, all of those states are virtually only the Italian state. You know, 80-90% of the sequences are, and some of them actually go up to 100, are the Italian strain. So it's heavily concentrated in the Northeast. And it's in the states that have the highest numbers. I mean, it's in New York, it's in New Jersey, it's in Eastern Pennsylvania, it's in Massachusetts. All of those are big numbers. I mean, today, New York, you know, had 700 deaths if you don't count the 4,000 they haven't been reporting. New Jersey's got 362. Massachusetts got 113. Pennsylvania's got 60. I mean, these are states that have lots of cases and they have lots of deaths. And it's related to this particular strain. But this strain is not only causing a high number of deaths, it's also taking over. And I mean, this is just basic evolution. I mean, this is
viral evolution, sure. Survival of the fittest.
That if you see one strain that all of a sudden is becoming dominant, especially like Washington State's a good example. Washington State, I mean, they sequenced a lot of virus up there. I mean, I don't know the exact number, but it's many hundreds. It's probably 300, 400, 500 sequences they've done now. It might even be a little bit more than that, but it's in that ballpark, somewhere between 300 and 1,000. And initially, it was all that one, you know, ORF8 strain. And now, if you look at what's been showing up in the last several days, they're quarters, two-thirds, three-quarters are the Italian strain. And it has to have an advantage to go from virtually zero to 60-70%.
It's got some pretty tricky advantages over the other. The orphate is gone.
Right.
I wonder if it's actually so virile and virulent that it's going into people who are maybe already infected. Let's just say somebody's got the orphate strain. Could the Italian strain come in and just take it over the body, so to speak? I guess it could.
Well, it could, but it's more likely it would show up as a mixture. And when you get the signals, now the CDC has released quite a few sequences in the last few days.
Uh-huh.
And they seem to have a higher percentage of the sequences they publish are showing mixed signals. And I'm not sure that the actual samples are that dramatically different, because they're getting these mixed signals in several different geographic locations. Hmm. I think it just comes down to exactly what their definition is, that, you know, they might call 60-40 a mixture, whereas another sequencer might say, well, it's got to be closer to 50-50. If it's not 50-50, we'll just count the dominant one and list that alone without showing it as a mixture. And I suspect that the mixtures that are being seen in the sequences reported by the CDC mm-hmm. are similar in these other labs, but these other labs just have a different cutoff where it's going to show the mixed signal and where it's just going to show the dominant signal or the consensus. You know, and so there is that type of activity where I think there's a lot of dual infections. And in the case of a dual infection, over time, that certainly could happen. I mean, it could start out as a dual infection, and then 3 or 4 days later, one just kind of outgrows the other one and gets past whatever that cutoff is. And then, you know, maybe it's, you know, 70-30, and 70-30, they just report the 70 and ignore the 30. And so when it gets to that level, it just kind of takes over, and that's what shows up in the published sequence. But it can take over that way. But it's very dramatic because I was looking at these, and since this is so common, I can, you know, determine whether it's this Italian sequence or not in about 2 seconds or so. So it's just a simple search for a couple of changes. And so as soon as you look at the sequence, it shows you whether it's Italian or something else. And so you can run through them very, very quickly. And the rate limiting step is just copying down the name. It's not doing the analysis. So in any event, that Italian sequence is becoming dominant. The deaths are high, and those who say, you know, 60,000 deaths is an overestimate, they're not. They just aren't looking at the data, and they're not paying any attention at all. And
in 2 weeks, when it reaches nearly 60, they won't say anything about what they were saying now. It's all gone.
No,
they're moving ahead.
It's less than a 1 or 200,000. That might only last a month or two.
Did you watch our president today in the latest briefing?
Yeah.
And how was it?
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday's was a classic, of course.
It was absurd.
Don't mince words now. Tell me the truth, Henry.
he said this is all WHO's fault. It's worse than that. And that they were basically covering up for China, and they favored China too much. Mm-hmm. And as a result, he's not going to pay them anything. He's withholding all payments to WHO.
Ah.
And the U.S. is about 10 or 15% of their budget. So he's saying, we're not going to pay them anymore. We're going to do an investigation, and we'll kind of review. You know, it's basically his projection that anything that he's done, he finds somebody else and he says, oh, they did it, and they did it much worse than I did. Don't pay attention to what I did. They're much worse. So basically, they covered it up. They hid the fact that there was a pandemic, and because of
he's going to punish them. Mm-hmm.
Okay. He's going to withhold all payments, and he's going to go and find other he's going to find other ways to spend the money and control this pandemic. You know, when in
it
fact,
sounds like a campaign plank to me, Henry. Mm-hmm.
The U.S. has more cases than any country in the world. They have more deaths than any country in the world. And the gap is growing, so that pretty soon the U.S. will have more cases than the rest of the world combined. And it's all because of his management of the situation, because he went and was looking for virus coming from Wuhan when it was all flooding in from Europe. And that's what the big difference is. And you know, he's talking about, you know, states kind of ending their social distancing programs and essentially opening up the states for business. And he says some may do it before the first. And
of May?
And said, you know, some, yeah. Yeah. So the question is, well, yeah, all the recommendations from the scientific community says that if you're going to go and open it up, you really have to have a testing program so that invariably, if you start relaxing this and have people going back to work and basically getting on public transportation or, you know, going to...
you need a beta test. You got to test it, of course.
Pick
an area and let's see what happens.
You not only have to test it, you have to identify the new cases and you have to identify who their contacts are and who's infected and make sure that they're basically out of circulation for 2 weeks so that they don't continue to spread. So you have to kind of put out
these fires
before they take off. And they don't have the testing. So they said, no. Well, what about the testing? Do you really have enough tests to do this? And he says, well, this is the states do the testing. This is up to the states. The states have to get their testing kits and they've got to do the testing. We don't have anything to do with testing. All of a sudden, the federal government has nothing to do with the testing. It's all up to the states. And
incredible.
The fact that the states don't have the test kits is irrelevant. And then on top of that, all these other at-risk populations are starting to get inundated with the virus. So you got the virus that's going to these long-term care facilities. You got the viruses going into the prison. You got the viruses that are showing up at these workplaces. They've got in South Dakota, they've got this pork processing plant. And the plant does how much of the U.S. production of pork?
It was a big chunk. I don't know. It's closed now.
5%.
That's right.
5% of the entire country is done at this processing plant. And how many positives do they have? 545 and counting. And this is just at one plant. This is in South
Dakota. That's the actual, I didn't see that part. That's the number of employees at that one plant positive. 500.
Right. It goes up every day. I mean, it was 200, you know, on
so
Thursday or Friday.
We can easily see
545. 545.
Yeah.
And there is no restrictions on anything in the entire state. Okay. And they're not even in the numbers. They're not even the numbers. The numbers for the entire county was 500 yesterday, and now it's up to 800. So 800, which includes the whole city of Sioux Falls, which is one of the biggest cities in South Dakota. And
I
so
see
they've got no restrictions. They've got no restrictions. This is one of the examples of, there's no problem on May 1st. I mean, these guys don't have any restrictions anyway.
What is he doing? Hold on. Is he going to, realizing that May, all right, June, July, August, the convention's in August, September, October, November, 7 months from the election, is he going to roll the dice on this? Is that what he's going to do? This is it? He's going to try and score, and if he doesn't, he's gone. He's just gone. I'm not going to run for re-election. Whatever. Is he rolling the dice on this? Is that what he's doing?
He's definitely rolling the dice. He's going to, all he's considering is the economy. And he wants to get the economy back on track. And the economy's not going to go back on track with this type of virus. Because what's going to happen is that as soon as he lifts the restrictions, the numbers are going to start going up. And the people are going to go like this processing plant. I mean, they closed it, but pretty soon they would have trouble functioning because the number of people that were out because they had the virus.
Right.
And the number of people that didn't want to come to work because they didn't want to get the virus would make it non-functional. They would not have
not
the
viable.
Personnel.
No.
Right.
I see a meatless future ahead. A meatless future for this country.
And there's another one. There's another plant right next door in Iowa. It's a beef slaughterhouse, and they've got like 150 positives at one plant. And so that's what's going to happen, because right now the level's much higher than it's been. And the only reason the virus is under control is because of the social distancing. I mean, people are at home. They're not interacting. It's way down from what it would normally be. And if you start lifting the restrictions and people start going back to work, then they're going to have people at work that are infected. And then it's going to spread at the workplace.
They're all going down.
They're not. And then they're going to not want to go back to work because, you know, it sounded like a good idea. They wanted to get back to work, but they don't want to get the virus because that's really rolling the dice. I mean, chances are you're going to get the virus. It's going to be kind of flu-like, and you're going to recover. And you might be tired, and you might have a cough that persists, and you might have, you know, not feel 100% for several weeks. But you're not going to end up in the hospital. You're not going to, you know, develop pneumonia. You're not going to be on a ventilator. You're not going to die. But some people are. And you start going, and you're at a facility, and you know, oh, so and so is, you know, 50 years old, and you know, they seem like they were relatively healthy, and they're dead, and they're dead because they went to work, and so the economy is not going to be humming when you got people dying because they went to work, and so. That's what's going to happen.
Everywhere you look, Henry, there are massive ramifications of what's going on here and Trump's inaction, his failure for 2 months at least. The new car market is on its ass, to put it in the vernacular. The used car market is in big trouble. The used car market is going to crash just as badly as the new car market, if not worse. This is really not good. Nowhere you look, they're not going to, this is not reversible. In a few weeks or a few months.
The consumers are going to sit tight. You know, they're going to hold on to their money.
They're not doing anything.
They're not sure what's going on.
30% of Americans couldn't pay their apartment rent on April 1st already. 30%. couldn't pay their apartment rent. So
right.
We're in trouble.
And even if the numbers do go down, and they might go down because you got the combination of, you know, the social distancing, and you've got potentially a seasonal effect. So the numbers might go down, but they're not going to, but the virus isn't going to go away. It's just going to get reduced. And what you're going to end up with is a dip, but the numbers are just going to bounce back up when you have enough people out and about, and they're going to start creeping back up again.
Uh-huh.
And people aren't going to be spending money because they're worried that it's going to repeat in the fall, and it's got the potential that it's going to be worse in the fall. And there's a good chance that that is exactly what's going to happen. So even if people get back to work over the summer, that doesn't mean that they're going to feel, well, it's over, you know, it happened in the fall and it was here and it wasn't that bad. And we were just kind of stuck inside for a month or two, but now we're kind of back to normal. And, you know, you might be a little bit more, take some additional precautions, but, you know, the worst is over. And then all of a sudden you start hearing about, oh, they had this outbreak here and they had this outbreak there. And you have these, you know, these workplace examples where people are still, you know, too close together at the workplace.
Oh, sure.
And somebody gets the virus and
right.
It transmits too easy. And then, you know, many people have the virus, and even if 80% of them recover, when you start hearing about the 20% that, oh, so-and-so's in the hospital,
right.
And I don't
sure.
know, it doesn't really look that good, and he's been in the hospital for a couple of weeks, and I don't know what, you know, what his status is, and family can't go there, and they have to talk to him over the phone, or he's intubated, and you can't even talk to him, because he can't, you know, he's in a coma.
Right.
And
right.
These stories will spread. You know, you'll hear, well, so-and-so's in a coma.
Well, the woman in a coma today in Washington State gave birth in a coma today.
Yeah. And the baby's probably okay. And
don't know that, but who knows?
But
he's in a coma.
In any event, if the virus is around or the virus is, it's got a high likelihood of coming back, that's not going to be the environment that you're going to get a quick snap back and the economy.
It's not a re-election environment at all.
Right, right. But Trump's going to roll the dice and hope the virus, you know, miraculously disappears. It's his words. And things will be hunky-dory in the fall, and the likelihood of that is very, very low. And especially if you go back too soon. I mean, if you go back too soon and there's plenty of virus around, you know, the only way you're going to get that under control is by doing a lot of testing and by quarantining and, you know, doing contact tracing and
mm-hmm,
quarantining.
Mm-hmm,
if you don't, and these people just have the virus and they, you know, for all the ones that have the virus and end up being quarantined, you're going to have others that have the virus and they don't even know they have the virus. You know, and then they go to work or go to school if they start school up again. And then, and even if younger people in school don't get that seriously ill, they're going to just pass the virus like, you know, it's
to grandma and grandpa. Yeah.
Right. It's going to go through the school. They're going to take it home, and then their parents are going to get infected, and then their parents are going to infect their parents. And then it's just going to multiply because it transmits easier than flu. You know, three times easier is six times easier.
You saw the new, of course, you saw the new social distancing CDC rules or suggested rules, 13 feet, not 6 feet.
Yeah.
And we do know that it can hang in the air for over an hour, And let's say you're on a jogging path and no one's in front of you and you're running along. 45 minutes earlier, someone had gone by coughing and breathing and exhaling, and it's hanging in the air and you breathe it. And that's what they're saying now, right, officially can transmit this. So, yeah, good luck, Donald. Good luck.
Yeah. So I mean, even with the social distancing now, which is pretty severe, there's still cases. You know, it's not like it's disappeared. It's kind of plateaued. And, you know, eventually it'll start going down. But it's, if that's countered by people start going back to work, and especially going back to school, then you're just going to create this environment for the virus to take off and spread very, very quickly, because it's already adapted. I mean, it's already got this one Italian strain. If the number gets high enough, so that a high enough percentage of the people have been affected by this, then that'll create selection pressure for a new version to emerge. And then, like I said, that's
very, very important to keep in mind, everyone. Imaginable new version. Yeah.
Yeah. And right now, there's not a lot of selection pressure for that, because there's already this Italian version that seems to already have an advantage. So it's already kind of, you know, proceeding along the lines of becoming the dominant species. But that doesn't mean it won't change if a significant percentage of the population.
That's what viruses do.
Resistant,
of course. We've talked about this forever.
I mean, they're modeled to do this, and when you get these high levels, you get these dual infections. That's why the CDC sequences are showing these mixed signals. And there's plenty of virus out there. There's a lot more virus out there now than there was for SARS. I mean, that was one of the limitations of SARS. It never really got to the critical mass. You had super spreaders and you had little pockets of it. But now you've got these pockets all over the place. You got pockets at the long-term care facilities. And, you know, the residents end up infecting the employees.
There are all those long-term care facilities. They're like little virus factories. That's what they are.
Right. And their employees are little vectors to take it out of the facilities and move it to wherever that employee goes, whatever. They move it to their home. They move it to their...
You know, Donald is going to have to come... He's going to have to come to a point, Henry, where he might even actually say it in one of his roundabout ways, that we're just going to have to live with it and get along with it, and whatever happens, we've got to save the country. There's going to be sacrifices have to be made, and we're going to have to do it.
Yeah. But you have to look at what the numbers look like. And you've got a virus that transmits very easily. And these numbers, you know, these 2,000 dead a day are happening with the social distancing pretty well intact. I mean, half of the deaths come from, you know, New York and New Jersey, and New York and New Jersey are pretty well shut down. I mean, they've got, the streets are pretty empty. I mean, there's some public transportation, and that creates a problem for the essential employees, but it's still much less than it would be if you kind of say, okay, everybody can go back to work, or maybe you'll limit restaurants, et cetera, because, you know, they're not as necessary, you know. And
who's going to go into a restaurant and sit down with 75 people at tables and eat a dinner and with any kind of comfort level?
Right. I agree. I mean, they're crazy if they think that if the virus is around, that everybody's just going to go and go back to the way they've been.
You know, no, masks? Distancing?
Everything's going to change. Yeah, and all of these things are still in short supply. I mean, there's stories about PPEs being limited for VAs. So they've got
just a few days here and there for things. How are you going to eat your pizza with a face mask on? Good luck.
Or these guys are washing it so that, you know, they basically contaminate themselves, taking the mask off and putting it in the washing machine, because they end up, you know, touching the outside of it to do all this. Yeah. I mean, the masks are made to be disposable, so you can take it off and get rid of it.
Not at $10 a piece.
and spread the virus at home. So it's, there's issues. Many, many variations in many different stages of the whole thing.
Right.
Going from the PPEs to going to work. So
good job.
We'll
thank you, Henry.
Tomorrow.
Okay.
But,
take care.
There's still a lot going on. Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
You bet. All right. Dr. Henry Nyman. All right. That's Tuesday. Tomorrow, middle of the week already. Talk to you then.